Blog Talk Radio.
Buenas noches, boricuas del mundo. Otro viernes, otra edición de Boricuas of the World Social Club Talk Show. Gracias por sintonizar y seguirnos cada viernes. Da mucho gusto traerles lo mejor del mundo boricua y latino en general. Yo soy Will Santiago Viera y este es su show, Boricuas of the World Social Club Talk Show.
Tremendos aplausos, increíble, estoy botado con esos aplausos, cada vez que los oigo pues me vuelvo loco, porque ya son miles y miles de personas que están aplaudiendo. ¿Cómo está mi gente? Este es su show, Boricuas of the World Social Club Talk Show, y yo soy su anfitrión, Will Santiago Viera. Hoy tenemos a nuestro amigo Jonathan Marcantoni, que está con nosotros otra vez. Como ustedes saben, todos los meses, el primer viernes de la semana, él nos trae un nuevo libro boricua de un escritor boricua o de la diáspora o de la isla, para que nosotros sepamos de ese libro y nos dé ese deseo de leer, porque es importante leer y especialmente leer lo que escribe nuestra gente. Así vamos más al fondo de lo que pasa en nuestra comunidad y lo que está pasando en las mentes de estas personas. En esencia está aprendiendo acerca de su propia gente, porque todo lo que esta gente escribe son de sus propias experiencias. Todo escritor escribe de su propia experiencia, igual que una persona que escribe canciones. Mayor parte del tiempo tú vas a escuchar una canción que vino del corazón y vino del corazón de la persona que lo escribió. Como siempre les pido, vayan a nuestra página en Facebook y denos un like. La página es Boricuas of the World Social Club Talk Show, ya me iba a perder ahí, Talk Show, y lo que tiene que hacer es ir y darnos un like. También tenemos Boricuas of the World Social Club Organization. Usted puede buscar esa página y también darnos un like ahí. Cada vez que tenemos un show, pues lo ponemos en esa página. Si no lo escucho en vivo, pues puede ir derechito a esa página y escuchar el show. Así que no se me olvide de eso. Eso es importantísimo. También estamos en Twitter, síganos en Twitter, Boricuas of the World Social Club. Vaya a Twitter, consígalo y nos sigue ahí. También vamos a poner nuestro show. Y quiero excusarme con algunos de ustedes porque ha pasado algunas cosas de ustedes que nos escuchan siempre que quiero aclarar. En estas últimas semanas hemos tenido un par de artistas y personas reconocidas que se comprometieron a una entrevista en nuestro show. A la hora de comenzar el show, ellos no aparecieron. Eso pasa y tenemos que comprender que muchas de estas cosas no se pueden controlar. En el caso de estas personas, las cuales no voy a mencionar su nombre, creo que son personas irresponsables. Como dije, cosas pasan y no se pueden controlar, pero lo que sí se puede controlar es la decencia. Una llamada, un correo electrónico explicando la razón por la cual no pudieron llegar a la entrevista es lo más importante cuando eres una persona con principios. Estas personas que mencioné no solo no aparecieron a la entrevista, sino que tampoco nos contactaron para excusarse. Nosotros hacemos este show sin fines de lucro y tenemos una audiencia definida y que nos apoya escuchando nuestro show. Aquí hay promoción en grande. Nosotros gastamos mucha energía promoviendo a estas personas con artículos, videos y postings en nuestras páginas de las redes y las páginas de grupos en el cual somos miembros. Una entrevista en nuestro show expone a estas personas a miles de radioescuchas por el mundo entero. Este show tiene valor. El que piense que no es necesario excusarse al fallar de aparecer en una entrevista con Boricuas of the World Social Club Talk Show no tiene propio respeto ni respeto a nuestra audiencia. Hoy nosotros en Boricuas of the World Social Club le damos las gracias a todos esos artistas y personalidades que han participado en nuestro show y que respetan nuestra audiencia. Quiero mencionar algunos de los nombres para que ustedes sepan quiénes son. Grandes músicos han venido a nuestras entrevistas. Entre ellos hemos tenido a Roberto Roena, a Nino Segarra, a Rey Sepúlveda, a Edgar Joel, Julio Vireya, tremendo guitarrista de jazz, Rey Serrano, increíble músico, y hemos también hasta hablado con el alcalde de Las Marías, José Javier Rodríguez. Hemos tenido escritores como Jonathan McAnthony, que está aquí con nosotros, Charlie Vázquez, Nelson Antonio Dennis, y hemos tenido muchas, muchas, muchas otras personas también con nosotros. Son personas que han respetado nuestro show, que comprenden que nosotros tenemos algo de valor que podemos dar, y le damos las gracias a ellos por compartir con nosotros. A esas personas que han decidido no aparecer en nuestro show y no excusarse con nosotros, han perdido ustedes, porque ustedes jamás van a aparecer en este show. Y con eso termino mi editorial, porque sé que tenemos un buen show con Jonathan, que está aquí con nosotros. Así que, mi hermano Jonathan, mi hermanote, ¿cómo andas tú?
Sí, es un placer estar aquí contigo, mi amigo. Y oye, que quiero añadir a lo que dijiste, que ese show es un tesoro en nuestra comunidad. Y una de las cosas que he experienciado en todos mis años, más de una década, de hecho, en la vida artística, es que lo que separa la comunidad latina con la comunidad blanca, y me duele mucho decir eso, pero los blancos, cuando dicen que van a aparecer en un show, lo aparecen. y muchas veces con los artistas latinos, muy lástimamente, dicen que quieren hacer eso y quieren asistir a ese evento o ese show o hacer esa entrevista y no aparecen. Y cuando alguien no es confiable, eso duele ¿cómo se dice? No recuerdo la palabra.
Duele en el alma, mi hermano, porque pero, tú sabes que deberíamos estar ayudándonos unos a los otros y dar nuestra palabra, y que nuestra palabra cuente. Y cuando nuestra palabra no cuenta, perdemos el valor totalmente. ¿Tú entiendes? Y eso es lo que es. Yo te agradezco tus palabras.
Lo comprendo bien. Porque si no somos responsables y si no somos personas de la palabra, cuando decimos algo, lo hacemos. Si no vivimos con ese código personal, entonces nadie va a confiar en nosotros. Y eso daña nuestra comunidad, daña nuestra reputación, esa es la palabra, la reputación. Y por la mayoría de los artistas, nuestra palabra es la única cosa que tenemos. Y si desprecias tu propia palabra, ¿qué hay? ¿Qué hay?
So, no hay nada.
It means a lot to me that you have me on your show as often as you do, and I sincerely appreciate everything that you do for our community, because you are a rock, y necesitamos rocas como tú, personas tan confiables, personas tan responsables y personas tan dedicadas a nuestra comunidad como tú. And so I thank you.
Well, I thank you too.
I think that was a very important message.
I thank you too, because Jonathan, you've made it a habit of coming here and educating our people and giving them something to think about every single time you've come here, and I truly appreciate that. In fact, you have been on this show more than anyone else has, and that speaks volumes about the kind of person that you are, and I'm sure our audience appreciates it, and me personally, ya tú sabes que I appreciate it to the max. But let's get to the nitty-gritty stuff here. You have another book for us, and I can't wait to hear which book this is. And so I'm just going to leave it to you, brother. I'm going to keep my mouth shut, because sometimes I tend to talk too much. And tenemos a Jonathan McAnthony con el libro del mes, el libro boricua del mes, the book of the month with Jonathan McAnthony.
Sí. Y antes de anunciarlo, quiero decir algo, que es, bueno, en la semana pasada recibí una noticia muy, muy, muy emocionante para mí, porque por muchos años he querido tener mi propia editorial, y en la semana pasada recibí la noticia de Black Rose Writing que ellos van a ¿cómo se dice? They're going to be a sponsor. They're going to be an imprint. I'm going to be an imprint. My company.
Okay.
Lo siento. Ha sido un día muy largo. Okay. Voy a colaborar con Black Rose Writing para hacer una editorial bilingüe, bilingual publishing company, que se llama La Casita Grande Editores. La Casita Grande Editores is going to be a company that focuses solely on Latino and Caribbean authors. We not only want Spanish speaking authors, we also want authors from Jamaica, from Haiti, from Bahamas, from the Lesser Antilles, because that is a section of the world that is completely underrepresented. Y como
and so creative.
Yes, muy, muy. Y como todos sabemos que son caribeños, mientras que vivimos en el paraíso, que nuestras islas tienen playas muy preciosas, y música excelente y muy bailable y comida deliciosa, también tenemos muchos problemas. Problemas de economía, problemas de gobierno político y problemas de desarrollo. And all those things, the good and the bad, they deserve stories. Mm-hmm. All that is magical and all that is horrible about life in the Caribbean deserve their stories. And the people who came from those islands and now live in the States, they also deserve to tell their stories. Pero La Casita Grande no va a enfocar en la literatura de inmigración o de identidad. We don't want the same old narratives. We want new narratives. We want people who want to tell crime stories and science fiction and literary novels, you know, really big, ambitious novels with ideas that challenge the status quo. And we want people who want to try out different styles that push boundaries and that change entire modes of thinking. Queremos artistas puras, porque hoy en día en el mundo literario hay una moda donde todo el mundo quiere escribir como la otra persona. Todo el mundo quiere escribir sobre los mismos temas. Y todo el mundo quiere compartir las mismas ideas. You know, it's all the same. It's all the same. And it's all geared toward appeasing white publishers and white acquisition editors. La Casita Grande es una editorial completamente dirigido por latinos. Soy el presidente, soy boricua, claro que sí. Y también mi jefe de editorial será Chris Campagnoni, quien es cubano. And the people we're going to bring on, we want to bring on other Latinos into our team. Now, the publishing house is going to premiere in the fall. We, like I attempted to say before, we are an imprint of Black Rose Writing. Black Rose Writing is a publishing house based in San Antonio, Texas, been around for 10 years. They published my book, Kings of 7th Avenue, and also Chris Campagnoni's book, Tourist Trap, which is currently nominated for Pushcart Prize. It was a very big literary award. And this is a publishing house that allows us to give our authors world-class distribution, to where their books are not just available on Amazon, They're also available on Barnes & Noble. They're available in any bookstore that uses Ingram or Baker & Taylor, any university, conferences, libraries. They can all order their books. So that way authors are not having to put in that money themselves. You know, and perhaps the biggest thing, the thing that is so central to me and Chris's philosophy, porque por 10 años yo era editor y mientras que escribía, claro, todo de mi trabajo era en la edición. Y yo vi cada vez con cada autor que mientras que sale su libro, no sabía lo que hacer después de salir el libro. You know, the book gets out there, mm-hmm. and the author is just like, oh, well, I'll tell my friends, and, you know, they sell 2 copies. So it is very important that we develop our writers. And so La Casita Grande, one of the things that we are doing is a very innovative thing, is that we are going to spend 9 months with each book, not only editing that book, polishing it up, getting it to where it needs to get to, but also getting our authors set up with a strong social media platform, getting them to network with media and with industry
promotion.
Insiders. Yes, I mean, it's promotion, but it's also, you know, one of the things that authors don't do that they need to do is get to know actual journalists. Get to know them, befriend them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean,
mm-hmm.
I actually have a relationship with the media, not just social media, but the actual media. And also getting to know some of these publishers, not as an author who is desperate to get attention, but rather as, hey, I have this book coming out. I'm an author. I really like your work. I really like to get to know you. Getting to know people on a personal level. And that's, and then we take that to a local level. So, you know, these authors, they might be doing a lot of things online, but they're not necessarily engaging their communities. So then it becomes a matter of, well, hey, what are things that go on in your community artistically, and how do we get you involved? How do we get you in that limelight so people know who you are? So in this manner, and we do a lot of other things to build up this readership, when the book actually comes out, there are, in fact, readers waiting to read it, and not
mm-hmm.
just the
mm-hmm.
person's immediate family and their friends, but a lot of, you know, people in their own communities, a lot of people in international communities. And so in this way, the author is already set up. They already know how to do interviews. They already have events scheduled. And so that way we give our authors the best possible footing. La Casita Grande is looking for professional development.
Yes.
And that is something that no other publisher is offering their people. And Chris and I want to give this service to our community, to our people, the Latin Americans and the Caribbeans, who, quite frankly, I mean, you look at the publishing houses that are out there, and, you know, in Latin America, a lot of them are very much regional. You know, they're very much just looking to that particular country or to maybe the neighboring countries, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of their distribution isn't international. A lot of their
mm-hmm.
distribution doesn't take into account non-Spanish or non-Spanish-speaking countries, pero hay hispanohablantes allá. And also, a lot of it follows along the course of what mainstream publishers in New York or London are doing. You know, you look at publishing houses in Mexico City, which, by the way, Mexico City, their publishing industry rivals New York's publishing industry, and same with Buenos Aires. Yet, you look at a lot of their books, and they're translations of international bestsellers.
When you're done getting all of this together, you need to come back here and let us all know. And when you start working on that first book, we want to be able to interview that first that first author that you guys assist in getting this word out. But I know you have I know you have a book of the month that we need to get to. Who is the person that wrote this book that we've been waiting for?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, what I would say about my publishing company does in fact relate to this person, because this person, when I was editor-in-chief at INO Publishing, he was one of the authors that I signed there, and this was actually a book that I brought into INO. And then, quite frankly, I would publish with La Casita Grande as well. And it is When Angels Fall by Manuel Melendez. He's a Queens-based writer. He's from Sunnyside, Queens. And Manny is one of the most fantastic story writers that I've ever read.
Very humble,
and
he is absolutely very humble.
He is. He's incredibly humble, an incredibly wise person, a great friend, as well as a great artist. And he is someone, this is a man who, he didn't get started until his 40s. His day job is as an electrician, he got started a little later in life, but he threw everything that he had into his art. And he's a great lover of literature. He has an understanding of story and theme and plot that many people spend their entire lives trying to get the amount of artistry and understanding that Manny has.
I've read a couple of his pieces, and I've enjoyed it, man. So, yeah, I understand exactly where you're coming from. Great writer.
No, absolutely. And When Angels Fall it's my favorite book of Manny's. Manny did a few self-published books, and this one was originally self-published. And when we picked it up, we made some changes, we cleaned it up a little bit, but for the most part, the book was as it needed to be. This is such a strong story. It is a murder mystery. It is also a supernatural thriller. Manny has a way of combining the real and the surreal that it's almost poetic in the way that he does it, because He really makes every element, no matter how far-fetched it might seem, integral to who that character is. Like, you just could not imagine it not being there. And in this particular story, one of the things that I found so exciting about what Manny did is he puts a lot of social commentary here. Our main character, Ferdy, lives in a tenement building with Muslim Americans and with Middle Easterners. And so he puts a lot of post 9/11 commentary in there, a lot of paranoia. And Ferdy is a champion for these people. Ferdy is a champion for the disenfranchised, for the poor, for the racially discriminated. And the selection that I'm going to read from, one of the reasons that I chose this selection is that it's quite frankly because Donald Trump is going to be the Republican nominee, and we have heard so much. So you'll understand that, sorry. We've heard so much hatred, racial hatred, and also religious hatred toward Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
Because of Donald Trump, and this particular section speaks to that very directly. So the main character is Ferdy. He's a pretty average guy, but there's something a little bit off about him, which develops as the story continues. So in this sequence, Ferdy is actually coming back from his father's funeral. And he gets sort of a nasty surprise when he gets home.
Okay.
Ferdy rubbed his eyes and stifled a yawn with the back of his hand. It had been a bumpy and uncomfortable plane ride, especially when he found himself squeezed between a man that snored throughout the flight and another man who reeked like salami and fidgeted in his seat like a 3-year-old brat. But when you arrived at the airport with no ticket and were willing to go home at any cost, prime seating is usually not part of the deal. Looking out the window of the descending plane, what was once an unrecognizable mixture of twisting roads and mountains surrounded by water were now identifiable landmarks. He spotted the peak of the Empire State Building, the sight gladdening his heart. Soon he was able to recognize the Grand Central Parkway and the strip of Northern Boulevard with its congestion of traffic snaking throughout the borough of Queens. New York City, my sweet lord. Curtis smiled with a sense of relief. I'm home. It was 20 minutes past 4 in the afternoon when the plane landed in LaGuardia, and Ferdy felt a wave of relief to be back on the ground. Thankfully, the guilt that had knotted him through most of the flight had finally faded into the realization that at times you must make choices and then live with them. By now, his father's body was covered with dirt in a grave that Ferdy doubted he would ever visit. His father's journey on this earth was finished, and that was something he needed to accept. Ferdy unhooked the seatbelt and moved his head from side to side, removing the stiffness in his neck. This was it, he promised himself. He did not want to board nor even see another plane for the rest of his life. Around him, passengers began to stir, removing bags from the compartments above the seats and gathering their possessions. Impatiently, they began to make their way toward the exit door as the flight attendants flashed worn-out smiles and thanked everyone for choosing their flight. Ferdy rushed through the terminal toward the taxi stand where the idling cabs waited patiently. A bored security guard waved at the cabs to approach while handing out pamphlets to the weary travelers, informing them what the cost of the ride to their destination was supposed to be. A few years back, the gouging prices that cab drivers were charging to naive tourists finally made the city take positive action. What at one time used to cost a few hundred dollars to frighten strangers for a quick trip to Manhattan now was a fixed price. Ferdy glanced at the pamphlet. Sunnyside was nothing more than $11. Not that he really needed the pamphlet, but it was nice of the city to start taking care of the uninformed travelers. When his turn came up, he jumped in a cab, getting a good chuckle when the driver was still outside opening the trunk for luggage that did not exist. "Sorry, man, I travel light," Ferdy said when the driver slid inside his cab and gave him a perplexed look. "It's the best way to travel. No hassles, no worries about having your underwear ended up in some hangar in China." The driver nodded as he turned the nose of the cab and drove it out of the terminal and into traffic. "Any way you want to go?" the driver asked in a heavy West Indies accent. "Yeah," Ferdy called out. "The best way that gets me home under $11. And remember, my man, I'm no tourist. The second I see Citi Field more than once, there goes your tip." "I hear you, man. I hear you," the driver said, and then remained silent throughout the ride. The taxi moved steadily through the dense traffic on Grand Central Parkway, every so often sinking and jumping out from the huge potholes that littered the highway. Ferdy was exhausted, and the weariness in his entire body began to slowly pull his eyelids down. He leaned back and was surprised that when he opened his eyes, the cab was sliding beside a parked car in front of his building. Ferdy paid the driver and slid out of the cab. Standing on the sidewalk, he felt the eerie stillness of the weekday afternoon. Unsnapping the key holder from his belt, he opened the door of his building and almost ran up the stairs to his apartment. Standing in front of his door, he took a quick glance at his friend Raj's home. Since that crazy Sunday morning, which seemed to have been such a long time ago, he had not spoken to or even seen his friend. He decided to knock and see how they were doing. Ferdy knocked softly and waited. He turned his head sideways and listened, yet there was no sound from within. He rapped his knuckles on the door again. Behind him, he heard the snapping of locks. Ferdy turned to David, his neighbor from across the hall, was swinging his door open. The first thing that Ferdy noticed was a large bruise on David's face, and when his neighbor came forward, there was a slight limp to his step. "Hey, Ferdy," David raised his hand and grimaced. "They're not in. I heard them leave early this morning." Ferdy nodded, accepting David's comment, for he knew very well that David was the type of neighbor that everyone's business was his business. "Are you okay?" Ferdy pointed to David. "Did your wife give you a beating again?" David smiled, and even that seemed to hurt him. "Where were you, man? You missed the title fight of the century. The old bitch from downstairs finally flipped." Ferdy quickly peeked at Raj's door, and a fear washed over him. He imagined the worst. "What the hell happened?" "Like I said, buddy, the bitch went insane." Did you know that she was not an invalid after all? An invalid after all? What are you talking about? Freddie asked, his annoyance coloring his words. Mrs. Drucker was able to walk, but I guess she was so fucking fat that she would rather sit on her fat ass in a wheelchair than walk and lose some of that weight. Okay, so she can walk, Freddie cut David off, his impatience taking control. What the hell happened? Is Raj okay? Nothing happened to his wife or children? Nothing like that. I mean, Raj is now walking with a broken nose and a big black and blue bump right in the middle of his forehead. Not only is he hurting, but to make matters worse, now Mr. Drucker is taking up where the old bitch left off. The bastard is calling the cops and demanding that Raj be investigated. So guess what? Remember that detective that came around the last time the bitch went crazy? Well, he's back again, snooping around and trying to find some dirt on Raj. David moved gingerly and shook his head. I told that cop that they should leave that man alone. Raj is more American than most people living in this damn neighborhood. Ferdy nodded. David was right. Every neighborhood in Sunnyside was the ultimate melting pot. It's what made New York so diversified and more unique than any other place in the world. There were Asians, Jews, Irish, Middle Eastern, Puerto Ricans, Colombians, Mexicans, and Dominicans here in Sunnyside. Ferdy bet that every corner in the world was proudly represented by one of his neighbors. David shrugged and continued. Anyway, thank God I was here. Who the hell knows what would happen? The crazy bitch was swinging a cane like a caveman. She was banging Raj's door, and when he opened it, she just kept on, smacking at Raj and then trying to push herself inside the apartment. Man, she was swinging at anyone that was near her. David, one second. Freddy raised his hand in between David and him. What was the reason this time for her to go ballistic? Yesterday was kid's birthday. What's his name? Fareed, Freddy said. Right, right. Anyway, they had a few people over. Wasn't like they were having a big party, you know. Nothing like that. Mostly just Fareed's friends from school. What the hell do kids do these days with play video games? Not much noise pushing a damn hand control. Shit, they weren't even playing music on. But I guess just the fact that these people were having a little get-together got the old witch all riled up. Man, she was screaming like a fucking lunatic, and then when I came out to see what the hell was going on, I found her beating up on Raj. I jumped on top of her, you know, trying to take the cane away, and that's when she turned around and began swinging her cane at me. She got me pretty good. David turned his face to show a big purple swelling on his left side. I had no idea how hard a walking cane feels until yesterday. Man, that lady shocked me, too. I didn't know she was so strong. Surprised the hell out of me. She even tried to push me down the stairs. But thank God I was able to grab her and we both fell on the floor. Bitch cracked two of my ribs. God knows what kind of permanent damage my back suffered. Damn, woman fell on top of me. Not once, but twice. Shit, twice? Freddy's eyes squinted, visualizing what must have been a comical scene. Yeah, fucking twice. She tried to get her up, and suddenly she grabbed her left tit and came crashing down on me. Took her Nesto and Raj all the strength they had to roll that dead weight off me. I'll tell you, it was damn crazy. Six freaking EMTs huffed and puffed to bring that fat old woman down the stairs on a stretcher. David pushed the door into his apartment and turned slightly, pain contorting his face. So, for all my good Samaritan troubles, I got a concussion and two cracked ribs and a fucking back that will probably snap in half when I get old. Anyway, Ferdy, I'll see you later. I need to lie down and pop a few painkillers. Have you heard anything about Mrs. Drucker? What about her husband? Freddy asked as he slid one key into the top lock of his apartment door. David shook his head. I haven't heard shit about her. If they're lucky, damn bitch is dead. The old man was coming home when they were taking her down to the ambulance. Man, you should have heard his nasty mouth. He was shouting that everyone here were accomplices of terrorists and that they were no different than Bin Laden himself. David sighed and started limping into his apartment. I'll see you later. He stopped and looked at Freddy over his shoulder. I haven't seen Raj and his family since they left this morning. They were really shaken up, but the one I'm really worried about is his son. Imagine having something like that happen on your birthday in front of friends from school. It's bad enough these people get hassled by total strangers just because they're Middle Eastern, but they should at least be able to live free from such prejudice in their own home. But what the hell are you going to do? Freddy watched David shake his head as he was swallowed by the darkness of the apartment. David closed the door and was gone. Freddy stood for a second staring at Raj's empty home while repeating David's statement over and over in his head. What the hell are you going to do? he looked at Raj's apartment door one more time and then opened and entered his own apartment. There was a lot he could do, Freddy smiled. Yes, indeed. There was a lot he could do.
Hmm.
And for more, you're going to have to pick up When Angels Fall, which is available on Amazon.
That's right. Yeah, folks, you know, go out there and buy it. I mean, this, you saw how interesting, how it grabs you from this small reading that Jonathan did. So, yo, we need to support our people, okay? Mm-hmm. And this is good stuff. We're not trying to sell you, you know, that medicine, a bottle of sugar and water, calling it medicine. We're selling you what's real, something, someone with talent, and it's important for you to support our folks. So go out there and purchase this book and do it tomorrow. I would assume that it's on Amazon and places like
yes.
that, correct? Yeah. So, you know, if you
yes.
don't want to leave your home, just go to Amazon. You know, pick up a copy.
Yeah.
You were saying, brother?
And let me tell you, Manny Melendez, he attends just about every book festival in New York. Every year he does the Brooklyn Book Festival, and he actually has all of his books there for anyone to enjoy. They're all really good. When Angels Fall is my personal favorite. He also has a book of Christmas stories that are phenomenal, and even poetry.
Poetry is excellent
well.
Too.
Yeah.
I happen to have. I asked him because you know I'm kind of lazy when it comes to buying stuff. and I talked to him about it. He says, you know what, I'm going to send you some of my material so you can read it. And I've been slowly reading it, you know, because I've had a million things that I've had to do. But I've been slowly reading it, and I'm hopeful that I can get him here to our show real soon so we can chat and,
mm-hmm.
you know, people get to know who he is and what's on his mind and that sort of thing. So, Jonathan, muchas
yeah.
gracias, mi hermano.
Mm-hmm.
Te lo agradezco de todo corazón. Once again, another great book, folks. Support our people. It's important for you
mm-hmm.
to do that. I can't emphasize that enough. You need to support
mm-hmm.
our people. So go out there and buy it When Angels Fall. Por Manuel Meléndez. Así que no se me olvide, gente, que esto es importantísimo. Jonathan, so vamos a hablar en la semana porque yo quiero seguir hablando un poquito acerca de tu compañía que pronto viene por ahí de camino. And in fact,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to say around here, I'm working on a logo. Hopefully you can use it because I'm a logo maker too. Brother, I
oh,
do
okay.
everything. People, yo hago de todo.
Yeah.
I'm a musician, man. I'm a graphic artist. I'm a songwriter, and I'm trying to write a book, but that's besides the point. One of these days, maybe
yeah,
you'll,
well,
you know.
Let me just say that you know, the real important thing, I think, with a person like you, Will, and this is something that I try to do myself, and so I greatly respect people like you because, you know, when you have a lot of talents, when you have a lot of skills, you know, it's one thing to use it to better yourself. It's a whole other thing to use it to better those around you. And that's exactly what you do, Will. And so I appreciate
Thank you,
that
brother.
Greatly, just how much that you give back to your community. And I hope that inspires other people to do the same.
Well, you know, Sunday is Mother's Day. And
mm-hmm.
I want to wish every single mother and the world, and especially those who are listening to our show or who listen to our show, a very happy Mother's Day. But that you just said was instilled in me by my mother. And my dear mother
mm-hmm.
always said that lo que Dios te da es para tú compartirlo con el mundo. So no te lo eche
mm-hmm.
a tu hombro o a tu bolsillo y quédate con él. You know, she always went back to, you know, if you ever hit the lotto, you're going to have to take some of that money and help the world, you know. And she always emphasized that. And she meant it. It wasn't like she was, you know, she was expecting me to hit the lotto, but she knew that I'd like to play the lotto from time to time, especially when the numbers were high, like it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And she always said that. Si, lo primero que tienes que hacer es compartirlo, okay? Comienza con tus hermanas, tu hermano, tus tíos, tus tías, and mami, pero me voy a quedar pelado. But, you know, that's mom, and I think that it's important to share, brother. It's been instilled in me, ingrained in me, and I thank you for noticing that because I want to share everything that I have
with the world, but I want the world to share with me too, because I not only want to teach, I want people to teach me. One of the reasons why we created this show is because we want people to learn, but I also want to learn from the people that come to our show, you know, and that's important. So, nos quedamos en tiempo, queremos tocarle un poquitito de música antes de terminar. Como siempre le digo, mi gente, para saber dónde vamos, tenemos que saber de dónde venimos. Que Dios me los bendiga, todas esas madrecitas lindas, que tengan un feliz día a las madres, un abrazo muy grande de mí, de Jonathan y de toda la gente que están envueltos, Margie Glia, que me consigue las entrevistas, también a Margie, feliz día a las madres, pero a todos los que están envueltos en ayudarme a hacer este show mejor de lo que es, muchas gracias. Jonathan, once again, thank you very much, my brother. If you want to, on the air, send your wife a happy Mother's Day wish, the mic is yours.
Everyone, check out this book, When Angels Fall. It is a wonderful ride. And also check out Manny Melendez's International Latino Book Award winning Battle for a Soul. It is an autobiographical as well as supernatural thriller as well. And support Latino Lit.
Wish your wife a happy Mother's Day and your mama. Come on.
And yes, and to my beautiful, wonderful wife and to my mother, happy Mother's Day.
And my sisters, I love you. Happy Mother's Day to you as well. Mi gente, no tenemos más tiempo. Hay fuego en el 23. Que Dios me los bendiga. Hablamos la semana que viene.
¡Fuego! A veces a las 12.